Welcome to episode 245 of Checkpoint Chat. My name is Alessandro Barbosa. I'm joined, I don't know why Matthew's smirking. I watched you try and hide it for like a good 2-3 seconds and then you just couldn't contain yourself anymore.
I can't help it. The thoughts we have when we start the show. Hello, I'm Matthew.
Oh, did I not introduce you? I'm so sorry.
I don't know if you did. It's rude. It's all our fine thoughts. We spoke literally before we started, before we went live. Okay. You said, man, it's hot here. And I said, here too. Like, I've got the heater on. You're like, yeah, but it's hot for different reasons. And then I just looked. If you're an audio listener, I need you to picture. Okay. Alessandro's frame. Here's the picture of summer perfection. This man has just come from holiday. He's tanned, looking full of color. Hard cut to me, looking pale. But it's funny. It's funny because it's not that I'm not tan. It's because my lighting is just very bad.
You were also in the Cape during December. You could have got your own color.
We've got winter and summer represented right here, literally.
You've got, a very cool lighting and warm lighting.
This is what's going through my head. Literally, as you say hello, I go, hey, that's funny.
But it's also like pitch dark outside by you still, isn't it?
It's pitch black.
That's fucking crazy. That's
wild. It's starting to light up. You know, it's funny. So on that, when we got back from SA, we've come back to midwinter, whatever. I think literally the first night we're back, say to Lenska, I'm going to close the blinds in our bedroom. So we don't wake up tomorrow. Like, let's have a nice sleep in. We don't get woken up by the light. What a waste of my time, because I forgot the sun only comes up at like, it's only actually bright at 8:30, 9:30, really.
So it's been such whiplash coming from Cape Town, where the sun was coming up at like,
oh my gosh, like 5.
Like 5, and then like going down at like 8:30 in the evening.
It was hilarious because often, I mean, we close our blinds because otherwise the light wakes us up in the morning because it's very bright. But needless to say, the blinds do not come down anymore. They just live up.
I can't imagine it, because even when I was visiting you, I was a bit like, wow, it's like 7:30 in the morning and it's still like dark, you know? Well, not dark, but it's like barely sunrise, you know? So
it's kind of weird because we were actually just saying this week, as bizarre as it sounds, we still enjoy the novelty of it. It's just unusual. So even the fact that it gets dark by 4:30, it's almost nighttime. It's actually quite nice. We'll explain why. I think Lenska puts it best when she says she feels like she has a longer evening. And it doesn't mean like literally, you know, I mean, I guess it is literally because it gets darker. But the point is, it feels later than it is. I mean, on the weekends, we've been home, like, oh my God, it's so late. It's dark outside.
Yeah.
And it's only 5:00. I go, oh wow, we've got the whole evening still. That's nice. Like, it's a surprise every time.
Yeah.
This is a source of time travel.
I guess it is, like, it is because it's so different. It's still novel. I'm not sure I would cope with that level of little sunlight, but that's not an entire, well, it isn't. It isn't just the UK. It's like anywhere in Europe, this is the case in winter. So it's not like something that continent can kind of get away from. So it's just a reality of living there. And I think you do get used to it. And like I said, the temperature isn't a huge issue because it's like, well, inside it's nice and toasty. So
no, and look, it is cold outside, but we're dressing appropriately that it's not terrible. I've got a big warm jacket that I put on, and honest to God, I mean, we haven't hit negative temperatures yet, but in current conditions, I don't feel the cold. Honestly, put gloves on, it doesn't bother me at all. So we're doing okay. We're surviving.
That's good.
You enjoy that sun.
I mean, more longer evenings gives you more time to play video games, in my opinion. So
exactly.
When the sun's out, you feel like you have to be doing something.
I'm more concerned that when the sun comes back and it's going down at 9 or 10 o'clock, there's going to be a glare on my TV.
Oh yeah, 100%. You got to use those weird blinds you've got to.
But also, it's hilarious because the weird blinds, as you've now seen with your own 2 hours, there's two of them and they've got like a weird warp in the middle thing all the way down, so it doesn't completely put out the sun. And then when it's summer, it's hot. You've got to have the windows open to let air in, and then the blinds are blowing. Not ideal conditions for gaming. Winter, though, premium. It's dark by 4:30, can see everything.
I never thought of that. Like, you have to actually, like, it gets hot in your apartment during summer, so it's not like you can have everything closed and shut.
I know,
don't
worry.
You don't have an aircon there. Yeah.
Come summer this year, we'll invest in a beautiful fan or something. I think we'll need it.
Mm-hmm.
We had just moved in this last summer, so it wasn't exactly our priority.
At least you know that your PC was up to the task in less than ideal thermal environments, you know?
Yeah, it's funny when, I mean, this is a whole discussion we've had off the podcast. My PC for Ants had heating problems. It was just running super hot. And then I sort of addressed that and I tested it during the last heat wave we had. And I think if it can survive that, then it's good. It should survive whatever other weather we get. It's not ideal. It still runs a little bit hot because it's a PC for Ants, but it works. So that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, also if the only fresh air it's getting is like 40 degree air, then like only so much it can do with that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Poor little thing. Poor little... It's a cute little cube of a PC. I quite like it.
It is. I still have to actually use it. I found that the things we've been playing and reviewing have been more like PS5, Switch. Last thing I played on it was probably Cocoon, which is not graphic intensive, and then Starfield before that, which is probably way more intensive than it needs to be for a game that doesn't look that good.
Exactly. 100%. Nail on the head. I mean, We nearly went down the route of doing Alan Wake on PC, but yeah.
You still have to play Alan Wake.
Yeah, I feel like I need to see that. I just feel like I need to see what that is all about.
Mm. Just replay it. You play it again, new game plus again, you're good.
Oh, but then I'd have to, there's no cloud save like transfer, so I have
I know.
To, like,
this is one of those times where I wish, because I would 100%, I do want to replay the game. I would love to replay it on PC though.
But yeah,
cross progression.
But I'm not playing through.
Not
yeah, I'm not no. playing through it all again just to get to New Game Plus and then play through that. Like, no way.
Are you even an Alan Wake fan?
I mean, I am, which segues nicely into, I guess, video
wow.
games. Let's check one chat. Talk about them. We played them over the holiday. Played more of them than, well,
I don't know.
More,
that's debatable.
More in some times and then less in others, I think. But definitely, I had a week before we went to Cape Town, or before like Christmas, where I just had like pretty much nothing to do. Shani was still at work. So I just like properly dived into, well, committed to finishing Alan Wake 2. You had already finished it by that point. I think you had just finished it. You hadn't, because I ended up overtaking you without realizing this. Yeah, so this is exactly the sort of thing that went through my head at the time. Was like, oh, Matty's finished it, so I'm just going to talk to him about all the things I'm finding. Up until the point of Matty going, wait, what are you talking about? I have not reached that point. And I was
please
like,
don't spoil
what?
It. I haven't
I had no idea. And then I completely forgot that, yes, you had come this side without finishing it yet. And you had to wait until you went back home to the UK to finish.
I was
so,
very far.
Yeah,
like,
my bad.
You weren't wrong there. I'd made quite a dent in the game, but I hadn't finished.
I mean, you were still within like act two, I would say, of three.
I wasn't in the last stretch, no. But I think we can preface this discussion just saying we both finished the game. I don't think we'll talk about explicit spoilers. And if we do, we'll obviously give fair warning. But if you do not want to have anything spoiled for this game, like even basic story beats, then skip ahead. Because we are going to talk about this game. And it is really good. And I'm dying to talk to you about what you think about it, actually, because last time we spoke, as you said, I'd played a lot and you had played very little. And we've come full circle now. We've both finished the game. And I think we both have thoughts on it. I can tell you from the get-go that my thoughts haven't changed on the game since I last spoke about it. It is phenomenal. If anything, I'm more in love with it than I was. You know, having rolled credits and played more of it, it is just an astonishing piece of gaming media. I think the last time we spoke about it, I had played that one segment, which you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And it is just such a gaming highlight for me. I don't know how Remedy topped that, but I take my hats off to them for experimenting with this medium and just making such a phenomenal game.
Mm. The last time we spoke about it was when we were doing Game of the Year. And I know you put it on your list and I didn't, purely because I just hadn't played as much. I don't even think I'd... At that point, I hadn't even gotten to the point where you could switch between.
Yeah, it was just a couple Alan hours.
And Saga. Yeah. I got to that point like fairly quickly afterwards. And from then on, I just kind of hurdled my way towards the end of this game because I just couldn't stop playing. And like, if I had to go back now and redefine the list, like Alan Wake would be there, like 100%. It would probably be in the... probably like number one or two spot.
It was my number two spot. I think on any odd day, it would have been my game of the year. 100%.
Yeah, I could see it being the same for me because it is like, it's not, I don't think it is a perfect game by any stretch. I think it tries so many different things and I think many of those things stick in very strong ways. Some don't, but it's just so ambitious in so many ways and trying to do so many cool different things within the medium of video games that I don't think you see, especially in the realm of like AAA development at all anymore. You don't see this sort of risk, this sort of audacious, like these ideas that actually get put in and work. And I think a lot of that comes down to just Remedy being super confident in how they make games now and understanding that players are kind of there for that sort of experience. You know, they're there for it being super weird and meta and mixing these genres of like, it can switch between this incredibly atmospheric horror to this almost, I don't want to say campy, but weird and endearing, you know, like section of gameplay that is probably the best thing I played last year. Yeah. And for all of that to be within the same game is kind of mind-boggling. And then you've got the stuff like, if you're watching the gameplay now, this melding of FMV and video games that work super, super well because they're done so subtly and intelligently, I think. And then the live action scenes that you kind of interswitch between, especially when you're playing as Alan Wake, are just done very well, acted very well. I didn't know until after I finished the game that the actor for Alan Wake, like the guy you see in the live action scenes, is not his voice actor.
It's not the voice actor.
Which is like, so when he talks in the live action scenes, it sounds like him.
Yeah.
How did they do that?
So it's actually funny. I was on Reddit last night and there was a post on the Alan Wake subreddit. I think, I don't know which news outlet it was from, but it was basically somebody saying, hey, I'm interviewing the actor, like the actual actor behind Alan Wake. What questions you want me to ask them? And one of the most liked responses was exactly that of, how do they do it? I can't think of the names off the top of my head.
Like, I know the actual like body actor for Alan Wake's got a very strange name, like something Ickley or something like that.
I think is Remedy's a Swedish company?
Swedish, yeah.
So I think it's probably a Swedish actor. I'm assuming because the name does strike me as very Swedish. But the question was, they're asking exactly what you've just said of like, how do they do it? Does he act the scene and then the voice actor does the lines, or does the voice actor do the performance and then him as the actor, he mimics?
Because that's what he would be doing on like animated gameplay
exactly.
as well.
But I think it's the latter, but I mean, it's an interesting question because you're right. In the game, whether it's gameplay or live action, you think it's him. And even the voice actor, I think, whether it's pure coincidence or not, just the voice fits so well. I can't disassociate that voice with the actor of Alan Wake. Like to me, they are one and the same, which is 100%. It's bizarre. The same happens with Sam Lake.
Saga and Sam Lake.
No, is Saga not the same? No, Saga is the same person, isn't it?
I don't think it is. I don't think it is. I think it's, if I recall the credits correctly, I mean, I might be mistaken, but I think they all had like actor and then voice actor for every single one. And they were like different. Yeah, it's, I mean, with Sonic, it's a bit different because whenever he's in live action, he never speaks. He's just kind of like making weird Max Payne faces half the time. Or dancing, which is really fun.
He's the best.
And then when you see him in game, he's Alex Casey. And I think Alex Casey is a very good, is a good character to kind of explain what this game is about, in that it's so preoccupied with this idea of fiction becoming reality, but also reality influencing fiction, and the complete like battle between those two, which, you know, in Alan Wake is a very real manifestation of that idea.
Yeah.
But it is very subtly playing on the ideas of just like social commentary and social media and the way that kind of works in our world, you know?
Yeah.
And Alex Casey being a character in Alan Wake's book, but then a detective in real life who actually hates the books because the detective is named Alex Casey. So people make fun of him about it. But then when Alan Wake sees him, Alan Wake recognizes him as the character he wrote. So like, which came first? It's like the whole game is this chicken and egg situation of like, which is actually real, you know?
Yeah.
Does Alex Casey exist because Alan Wake wrote about him, or because he was a real man that Alan Wake coincidentally just had to like invent in his book as well? So and that's just like one portion example of that theme being explored. It's a lot so cool, like, as especially as the story gets to the end. And I do agree that, like, I've seen a lot of, well, I've listened to a lot of people talk about this game, and some people say the story gets a bit incomprehensible near the end. I don't agree. I think I, at least to my understanding, had a firm grasp of what was going on, but it does get very difficult to track. Like, it expects you to think about these things beyond what is being told to you explicitly. So I still have questions at the end. We were discussing them before the show. Like, I don't fully understand how certain characters can be in one place or the other almost simultaneously. But like, I think that's part of the DNA of this game, is that it is this weird complex web of like realities that even Alan Wake can't keep like track of at any given time.
I do think so. I've seen also discourse where people say, do I have to have played Alan Wake 1 before Alan Wake 2? And on the box, it's like, no, you don't have to, it's a standalone game. And while I get that, I can't fathom playing this not having some sort of prior knowledge of the context behind what the hell is going on here. Like, can you imagine playing this? You don't know what Bright Falls is. You no idea what the lake is, the dark presence, etc.
Don't know who Thomas Zane is.
You don't know who Thomas Zane is. Like, you just lose so much of that. You know, the context, I think, is just the right word. And I feel you'd be doing yourself and this game a disservice.
I don't necessarily think you have to go back and play it.
No, no,
but
no.
I
just get a recap. 100%.
Yeah. You need to know what happened, especially there, and then, you know, the DLC that took place after, because that continued the story very linearly. So
I never played the DLC. I read up about it because I wanted to just make sure. Yeah. All that said, as well, I found the mechanic of the detective board, while it's not clunky. I think it's more, it just slows the game down to a crawl when it happens. But I'm somewhat grateful that, because it really helped me get a like pause and map out the story like a detective would. You know, oh, who is this person? Here's this clue. I'm gonna pin it under this question. Okay, it's like, I know it's Saga figuring things out, but it's also helping me, you know, consume the story, because I'm obviously then being sort of led along in the same way she is, which I think is just so clever. Like, I think it will put some people off having that interjected into, you know, this horror game, but I really appreciated them including that. And I think it's very clever.
I agree with you. I think it's a really cool mechanic. I enjoyed it a lot more initially, and then started finding it annoying the more and more I had to, well, you see, this is the weird thing. I say had to engage with it, but
technically, I quickly found out that you didn't actually have to engage with it at all. Like, it's kind of there as this optional piece. In the beginning, they make a big deal out of it and they actually block progress before you make certain deductions on the board, because without that deduction, your next like objective doesn't update. But that starts like tapering off quite a bit. And I found that especially in the later acts, you could just kind of play. And then when the act finished, when you went back to the board, it just resolved itself because she was like, okay, well, this case is closed.
Like I said, like
so she automatically added all the evidence to the board for you.
That's interesting.
So I was like, okay, so that's a nice like middle point where like if I don't want to continually open this thing, like it will just clean itself up over time. But when there are important story things that I need to be made, you know, very abundantly aware of, it forces me into that moment. And like, then you have to make that deduction. The part that I enjoyed more in her like mind palace was more the, I don't know if it wasn't called interrogations, was it? But it was called like, profiling.
Profiling. Yeah.
Yes. When you actually talk, when Saga kind of inhabits the mind of other characters and kind of like tries to understand what they're thinking. So she's like profiling them. But it's done in a way where she's almost having a conversation with them. So they're like superimposed in the environment and talk to you. And then there's some weird things that are done with that mechanic later down the line, which are super surprising because it happened so late and I think very cool. I thought that sort of thing was really a nice way to get to know a lot of characters that you don't engage with face to face as Saga. But like when she has to think about their motivations, they're kind of like there. So it's the whole mind place thing is really cool. I do agree with you, or at least with people you've heard saying it slows it down somewhat. I think that stuff can be refined a bit, but the first idea, like a first way to do that, I think it was a very interesting, sort of like in the way that L.A. Noire was like a very interesting detective game where it made you focus on like evidence and things that you heard and interrogations. Like that is, this is that first iteration of that. And I think if they do make another Alan Wake or they continue, you know, with this in the DLC, they could maybe refine it slightly. And I'd like to see more of that. I don't think it needs to be like ripped out entirely.
No.
And then by the same token, Alan has his version of that where it's like his writing, which can change reality, which I thought was very cool. I think it can be expanded upon a bit more because it feels a bit like I'm going to stand in the spots and just cycle through the different options I have for the scene and see what happens. So when you start like seeing it from a mechanical perspective and less of like this cool, oh, Alan is changing reality with his writing perspective, it becomes a bit less neat. But it's still, I think they still use it in very interesting ways, especially in, it's hard to even pick like the best
location
portion of Alan's gameplay, but like the hotel is incredibly creepy. And when you start messing with scenes there, it becomes even more so. But then the theater is just incredible. I think it uses that stuff so well. Especially with regards to like how changing a scene will show like a movie on the screen, and depending on the scene in that movie, that will manifest a like a light that you can then bring into the real world, or like they will shine light to a certain portion of the room and that will open up a new avenue. But that only happens when you're in this specific scene. Like, it's so clever.
It's very
cool. So clever.
I would love to see, and I know it'd be a hell of a lot of work, but more if you could apply, you know, that idea to entire locations. Like, for example, we know the cinema, it is, there's four, every location is typically four rooms you can apply like this filter to, or this theme or genre to. It'd be cool if you go to a cinema and it's like, cool, I want to see what the whole place looks like through this lens. What does the whole place look like through this lens? Like, that'd be, I know, an insane amount of work, but it would be cool if it was expanded to that level where it's still like a small portion of the game, but you can change it to whatever Alan's writing or written, whatever.
That does feel like the natural progression of that mechanic. Like, definitely. I think it's like, okay, we can make it work in small, disparate like portions of this map, but what if it, like you said, like takes hold of this whole building, you know, at any given time. I think that would be really, really cool. I guess what we haven't spoken about is just the like Beautiful beat gameplay. This is like a survival horror through and through. It's like very much like a Resident Evil, except I would say much slower.
Way less action, but definitely in terms of UI movements and feel. Like I think that they took a lot of inspiration from
the Tetris inventory. You've got like charms. Yeah. You've got weapons that are locked behind puzzles that you can completely miss in some cases, like I did. And yeah, just a good balance of like inventory management, scarcity of ammunition, stuff like that. I do think that combat sometimes tries to be stretched in ways where it's just not meant to. There's a moment, because this is really late in the game, but I'm not going to say who's there or anyway. It's like a sort of very climatic battle. And you just have to survive against waves of enemies. And I thought the combat completely broke down. Like, I just could not cope with the number of enemies being thrown at me combined with the very slow and deliberate animations used for reloading and changing weapons and stuff. It just felt like those were two game ideas clashing against one another. And I found that to be a very frustrating encounter because of how difficult it was to get through just because of that feeling. And when I did get through it, I felt like I got lucky more than like, oh, I understood something, you know? So
should have used those flares, man.
I ended up winning because I just got like so angry. I was throwing fucking exploding casters everywhere and just trying to shoot them. So, and then, yeah, anyway, that was the one part that like really irked me in terms of combat. But I think in most other scenarios, you put into situations where there's a handful of enemies and that handful is enough to deal with, it's still challenging.
I was gonna say throughout the game, and I completely hear you with that last bit, it is that typical game tick box of like have a big final hurrah. Did you need to have it in this game? Maybe not.
Funnily enough, Control had the exact same problem. At the end where you have to like ascend that like skyscraper and if you die, you're right at the bottom And I was just like, fuck this, you know? So like Remedy's got to like rein that in if they've done it like twice in a row now.
Nailed it. The pacing is not the right word, but the balance of enemies throughout the rest of the game, like you said, absolutely fair. You walk through the forest and at any point you might encounter three or four taken. And that's enough to be a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, it is, okay, I need to prioritize. I've got to focus on the two running at me and like sort of dodge the third one who's throwing axes at me. It's I find that very fair. So they've definitely nailed that, but yeah, that end bit was maybe a bit much. You're right,
I just think it was a bridge too far. It was a bit too much. And then there's a handful of like boss fights. Some of them work, some I think for the most part
For the most part, I really enjoyed the boss fights. There's always some other mechanic. And I think, to be honest, like in 2023, now 2024, it's very difficult to make a boss that isn't by the numbers or that stands out or has its own unique mechanic. Like, I wouldn't know where to begin designing a boss fight. Like, I think, especially with an over-the-shoulder third-person shooter, like, how do you make a difference? And to their credit, there are one or two boss fights where it is different. There's a thing you have to do or whatever.
I think all the fight saga has to do, boss-wise, they change the mechanics up like more than enough to justify the difficulty because, like you said, there are unique ways to kill everyone. So, thinking back, does Alan doesn't have boss fights?
I don't think so.
Yeah. His chapters just kind of end.
It's Alan has, it's funny because
Alan has like very looping rooms.
He's got looping rooms and he's got shadow monsters, okay, which I enjoy them purely from the fact that I really enjoy, so I'm going to zone in on that quickly. Those shadow monsters that Alan fights, I really enjoyed it because it was very difficult to figure out which ones were real, which ones were fake. And I can't tell you that I found a trick or a thing that went, oh, that's clearly a real one. I need to shine my light on it. So I was always like cautious around them.
So there's a way to, okay. So I figured out that, or I might be wrong with this, but I started seeing like a pattern where they will always not attack you until you sprint. if you start trying to get past them very quickly, they will all attack you.
If you're right. If you put your lights off and walk, you can typically...
Yeah, you can get past pretty easily. Like, there'll be maybe one or two that might attack you, but in general, they won't. But if you try and hoof it around them, we'll fucking get
but
you.
If, like, what I'm saying is if you have two of them side by side, I can't tell you which one's the one.
Until you get, like, super close to them or something like that. Yeah.
Versus, so Alan has that versus Saga, who has... all of it, like, not on your toes enemies necessarily, because there's an enemy there and you know, okay, I need to kill them. But Saga's got way more of those jump scares of, I mean, I don't even know if Alan has many. There are a couple, but versus what she has to go through, I was like, shit.
Are you meaning like the actual FMV, like, jump scares?
FMV, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, she has way more. Alan has some with the Dark Presence and Scratch. But hers, I mean, Sagas are pretty much every fucking chapter that's something haunting.
Every 3 seconds.
And, oh my God. We have a friend, Mick, who found those jump scares quite irritating. He called them cheap. I don't agree with that because I think they are very smartly implanted to really catch you off guard.
Yes.
And they're done with intent. Like, they are tied to character moments, or you soon learn that those jump scares are like people from the dark place trying to fuck with you, essentially.
I think by the end of the game, you realize, like, oh no, it's thematically done right.
Yes,
it's not just you know, you walk around a corner, jump scare happens for shits and giggles.
I mean, and like we've said, there's moments in Sagas, like when you're in the old age home, when you're trying to hunt down an old lady, it's a character, and she's haunting you. It is some of the most terrifying, just because of how visceral that image is. It is like haunting. Like, I can picture it in my head now. It is so well done and done at moments you don't expect. You know, there are parts where you are like, I'm waiting for this to fucking pop out at me. I'm waiting. Nothing happens.
And then,
and then when you're not expecting it, it happens. You know, it's.
I mean, a good example of this, and this is a mild spoiler, but I mean, it's not story beats, whatever, but in terms of how well they do these scares, there's one moment in the game where you see a dark presence you have to follow, a Saga, and then you see them and you kind of have to follow them into the woods, whatever. You think, okay, sure, there's going to be like a boss fight or something now. But on the way to following them, there's a save room there. So of course, I walk into the save room and I hit, you know, and I'm there to save. But there was a jump scare in that save room, which I didn't expect. I mean, like, that to me, it was just genius, because I think, oh, thank God. It's like the typewriter rooms in Resident Evil. You know, you can always go in there.
You're expecting safe haven.
Mr. X can bang on the door, but it doesn't matter. Like, the story-wise, you're just untouchable in there. But in Alan Wake, there's just that one moment where I was like, oh, thank God, the light. And then there's a jump scare, and I was like, oh my God, like, I did not expect that.
And I think that moment was so situational for you, because had you not...
Oh, yeah, could have just skipped it, yeah.
Yeah, if you had not gone into the save room at that point, because that is more of a, like, very story moment, like, you would have never seen that. But I think it's because thematically you are now entering the light where the dark presence hates being, so it's just reminding you that it's there.
Yeah.
Type of thing. It's very well done. All of those moments are incredibly well done. I mean, we can talk about this game, I think, forever. It's a really tremendous game that I think everyone should at least give it a go. Like, I can completely understand that with its pacing and with its gameplay ideas, it's not going to be for everyone, especially if you're going in expecting a more action-heavy Resident Evil-styled experience. It's like almost the antithesis to that. It is far less combat, way more exploration, and a lot of very... I think demanding narrative where you have to think about what's happening rather than just it being dished to you. But it's, I think, for people who want to engage with it, it is incredibly special. Yeah.
My unfair request to everyone is to play it for at least the first 8 to 10 hours to get to the Astral Maze equivalent of the game.
Then you can put it down.
Then you can say, this game's not for me.
You say 8 to 10 hours, but it could be even more, because if someone just decides to play Saga completely...
Yeah,
they'll never see that until...
When you can switch between protagonists, play Alan ASAP. you can thank us later.
So I did 1-1. As soon as I finished a chapter, and you can definitely see this is the end of a chapter.
Yeah.
I was and like, cool, I'm switching.
I flipped between the two.
Because I saw people speaking online. They were like, oh yeah, I finished Alan's story first and went back and started Sagas. I was like, that sounds insane.
I can't fathom that. That to me is just...
The amount of story intersection, like I get the stories made in a way that allows for that, but it must be so confusing because like you are seeing things completely out of order and
anyway, I don't know.
Very cool. But yeah, go play that Astral Maze equivalent. It is.
It's that, and don't Google it. You have to play through
it.
You can't watch it. It's just the magic is lost.
I've never in my life played a game. Like, I often have this thing where if I'm playing very story-heavy games, Shani will be like, what are you watching? And I'm like, I'm not watching something. I'm playing a game.
Mm.
But this was the first time where I was like expecting that question to come. But the question that emanated from my bedroom was, what the fuck are you playing? Because of the music that was coming out of there. And I was just like, you have to come and see this. It is so insane.
I played it late one evening. Like I was exhausted, but I'm playing some Alan Wake. I played that sequence and I climbed into bed with such a smile on my face. And the next day I spoke to Lenska about it. I said, this is what happened. I've never seen something like this before. I said, you know what? I've got a save file. You have to try it. And she did.
I'm so jealous that you got a save file.
It's amazing. Absolutely. Just
how many times have you listened to that song since then?
Way too many times.
So good. It's so good. It's and really, again, really good. You can't, I don't even want to say the name of the song because listening to the song gives away so much of that moment's energy. Like even knowing, because I knew that it was coming. Like I knew people have been talking about it. They were like, there is an Astral Maze moment in this game.
Mm.
And when it started, I'm like, okay, this is probably it. I'm ready.
I also knew immediately. I was like, this must be what people... And to be honest, when it started, I was like...
I was like, okay, cool, this is fun.
Is this... Like, it's cool, but is this the moment people have been like...
Yes.
And then by the end, it was like, that was fantastic.
It's just so incredible. It really... And it goes on... It straddles the line of like, maybe this is going on for too long, but also at the end, I was like, I wish there was more of this. Like I
need 5 hours.
Absolutely loved this. Yeah. Just, I can picture so many moments from the FMV in that game, from that moment that I just fantastic. Live rent free in my head till the day I die. I think.
Yeah. Like so good. That is like, we're beating the shroom. That's like a top 10 gaming moment for me. It's something I'll never forget. Yeah. It's really,
if we
really
had
good.
A category for that last year, and we had played Alan Wake, this would be like number 1, 2, and 3 up there. Yeah, so good. For sure.
Sure. So I think the long and the short is play Alan Wake.
Yeah, play Alan Wake. It's fucking
We've
great.
We've only spoken about it for half an hour.
And there's two DLCs coming. So
cannot wait.
Yeah, I'll play super those. Stoked to see what they do with that.
There's a bit of a lull. There's a bit of a lull between games coming out. I've just... played Prince of Persia, which we'll get to.
I know I'm mad.
I do want to play Quantum Break because it is the one
it's a good game
Remedy game that I've just missed.
I'm a mad apologist for that game.
I'll go in. I know more or less mechanically what it's about, but I know nothing about the story. So
it's also not as long as like an Alan Wake.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
you can also now download the series so you don't have to stream it. you have to watch that series. They're like half an hour episodes. They're fun. Remedy just experimenting with ways to intertwine these mediums. Mm. Like Alan Wake 2 and Control don't exist if things like Quantum Break didn't, you know, I don't think in my view.
Quantum Break walked so Control and Alan Wake could fly.
100%. 100%.
Could run. Sorry, I completely butchered that.
It's the same thing I said. I agree with that. And I agree with the notion that Sunset Overdrive walked so Spider-Man could run.
So Spider-Man could swing.
And there you go.
My goodness.
Prove me wrong. Lance Reddick's character from Quantum Break was supposed to be Roland Dahl.
I also saw that after... What I typically do when I finish games, especially narrative-heavy games, I obviously have my own understanding, but I like to go read up what other people have said or maybe I've missed something, and that was something that did come up. And he actually was in the credits. They did
Yeah, they probably started with him.
I think, yeah, he must have been there in some capacity, shame.
I think that would have been a very nice way to tie that all in, because like it would have explained a lot about his character in Quantum Break. Like when you learn a bit more about what and who Wallendorf is, like it starts
and makes you
puzzle pieces.
Yeah. I've been trawling through the Reddit, and I think there are hints that all of this exists in the same thing.
Oh yeah, 100%. And I'm so happy that they are like going through with this idea. Yeah. It's going to make the next Control so fascinating. I think.
So we are going to move on. But the last thing I'll say is that if I had not played Control, there are a lot of things in Alan Wake 2 that also would have just, you don't have to have played Control, don't get me wrong. But I thought, maybe there'll be a nod to Control in some form.
I feel like playing Alan Wake 2 without any of that is like watching just a random Marvel movie in the MCU. Expecting to understand everything.
Yeah, that whole FBC is actually present throughout Alan Wake and
very, like, very, very prominently. Yeah.
I mean, no spoilers, but there are some story beats linked to the FBC. And it's like, if you've not played Control.
You see them very early in the game, and I thought, this is going to be like the little callback. And then they are involved way more. So,
I mean,
Control is a fucking great game. So, like, go play that too.
Just play all of Remedy's games. Go back and play.
I never played Control DLCs.
Not at all. I want to play the Alan Wake DLC with all the time I have. So
imagine thinking Ati is an Alan Wake 2 character. That's wild thing.
Crazy. Absolutely.
Maybe he is. Who knows?
Don't know. Cool.
Okay. So other games very quickly that you played over the holiday before we dive into.
What else did you play over the holiday? Did you play anything else? It was like Alan Wake.
So after Alan Wake, I was kind of like empty. I didn't know what to do with myself. I'm going to play Legend of Zelda, you know, try and finish that. I did play a little bit of that, and I took my Switch to Cape Town. I straight up did not boot the thing up while I was there for like 10, 12 days. Just enjoyed not playing games for a little bit. Played a lot of poker on my phone. That's what
nice.
I played. What I did end up playing when I got back home, because I just had this weird urge, which is strange because I've been the one person, I think, in our Discord that has really been like, I don't get this game and I don't understand it and I've never really... So I'm very happy to say that I am now into Dead Cells.
Nice.
I've just started playing like a run or two a night. I'm kind of understanding it in a way that I never used to prior. And I'm digging it, and I might buy that Castlevania DLC. It looks cool.
So, yeah, it's wild to me because Dead Cells feels like a lifetime ago for me. That's like early Switch days.
It came out in like 2018.
Yeah, and I inhaled that game.
I was doing exactly what
you did, like a run or two a night, because the runs are like
quick,
from 15 to 30 minutes long, depending how far you get. And that Castlevania DLC is fantastic. Like, nice little callbacks to that franchise, cool weapons.
You played it?
Yeah, I've played it.
Oh, I had no idea you played the Castlevania DLC. Okay, sick.
Spoke about it on this podcast.
I don't recall at all. I do not recall.
To be fair, I don't recall half of the stuff we've spoken about, so it's all good.
Yeah, there's lots of DLC in that game, which I think is a bit weirdly implemented, because like when you leave an area, there's like three doors and two of them will prompt you to the eShop and you're like, oh. Okay. It's still, I'm having a good time. Fun time with the game. It's good.
Nice.
What else did you play?
So let me just timestamp this. I obviously chipped away at Tears of the Kingdom. I've made some very good progress there. I've unlocked the whole map basically. I've done 130-ish shrines out of, I think it's 150. I'm sure I've seen that number kicking around.
I have
around
no
somewhere.
Idea. Absolutely no idea.
So I'm kind of like on the home stretch, quote unquote. I've done three of the four, not Divine Beast, shrines in this game. I'm about to do the fourth. So I'm like nearly there. And then obviously the only way to finish a game is to have ensure that I've got all the shrines before I go for the big last boss fight. So I'm getting there. It's been like those listening know we've spoken about this game for months now. I'm 120 or so hours in, still absolutely loving this game, just chipping away at it in small bursts, and absolutely loving it. What I have absolutely snorted in the last, like literally snorted in the last week or so, is the new Prince of Persia. The Lost Crown. Let me just guess.
Is it the Lost Crown or is it the Lost Prince?
I'm sure.
That would be weird if it was Prince of Persia, the Lost Prince. That'd be strange, yeah.
Fire that wrath. I think it's the Lost Crown.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
And so just for some context, the first Prince of Persia I played was the OG. Like the very first, I think 1989, 1988, somewhere there. And I did not touch any of the modern like reimaginings of that game. So I never played Sands of Time, The Warrior Within, and whatever came after.
Oh, really?
Never.
Wow.
It's just one of those weird gaps in my gaming repertoire where I just miss them. I can't tell you why. I just never played them. So I'm coming into Prince of Persia. What I'm getting at, I'm coming into Prince of Persia in a form that I understand it. It's a 2D side-scrolling platformer. And this game is sort of a reimagining for the whole franchise in that it is a Metroidvania. And suffice to say, it is very good, which it surprised me. Like, I'll be honest, and not for the reason that, like, oh, you know, Ubisoft don't know how to make a good game. Like, I think Ubisoft are very good at, they know how to make good games. Whether all the games they make are good is debatable. I mean, like, Assassin's Creed Mirage is a good example of, like, yes, it's a good Assassin's Creed game, but does it set the world on fire? Like, no, not necessarily. Whereas this game I went in sort of with tempered expectations of, I hope it's good. However, it's been delayed. Like, I'm a bit unsure whether the final product will be as good as I hope it is. And I'm very pleased to say that it is. Like, this is a very well-designed Metroidvania. There's a reason I finished it so quickly. It's because I could not stop playing it. Every time I got a new ability or entered a new area, it was the only comparison I have is, remember when you played Hollow Knight as a quote-unquote recent example of, you play a few hours, you go, this is fun, and you hit a point where you go, oh, okay, like, I've unlocked this ability, I can go to this area, okay, cool, this area is quite big, oh, it keeps getting bigger, oh my god, now to loop back to this area, oh, now I've got this new ability, and the map just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and then it starts folding in on itself. I had a lot of that from this game, where I was blown away by just the level of detail in every single little screen, to the point where there are optional, you know, in typical Metroidvania fashion, you'll get an ability that lets you get to an area that you couldn't get to before. And these little things are peppered throughout the map, and you don't have to engage with all of them. But like, there are moments where I've looked at my map and gone, oh, there's a darkened area. Let me just go explore there because maybe that's where the next objective is. And then I go there and it's just a few rooms with pure platforming puzzles, or just like raw platforming. And I do it and I get a small reward and then I carry on with the main story. But those little sections are so well designed and so well put together, which just honestly, like, it just surprised me because I didn't expect that. I sort of expected maybe a by the numbers game of, like, you know, you go get a new ability, you move on, get your next ability, move on. That's that. But what I got instead is this huge, sprawling, beautifully designed labyrinth with just so many hidden secrets and things to do, and just some really cool ideas which I'd never seen before. Like, I think Noelle mentioned in our Discord this week, because she's also played it, and her reviews up on her website, Fangirl. There's one main quest puzzle which only exists for this one main quest. It's like five rooms where you basically have to, it's difficult to explain, but there's a timer and you have to loop. So you'll do a movement with you'll move through the room for 10 seconds, then it rewinds, and the first character that you ran with sort of replicates and you run alongside them.
I think if
you're doing
about,
like a time trial in a racing game, you can see your ghost driving alongside you. So it's that, but you using your ghost to help you solve the overall puzzle of the room. So for example, the first beat will be you run with your first character and stand on a platform to open up a trapdoor. Then it resets. Your ghost runs to the platform to open the trapdoor, but then you go and you jump up the trapdoor and you do something else. And you have to layer these things to figure out the solution. And you could build an entire puzzle game out of that, honestly. Like, it's so smart, but it only exists for one portion in this game. And it's so clever. Like, I think the things they've done just blew me away. Like, I keep saying surprising because, like, I did not expect that. I really didn't. And again, that's not a knock to Ubisoft in any way. It's just, I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, I'm quite surprised at just the scope of this game. This is not something I would have expected to be like nearly 20-hour Metroidvania, which is, up there with Metroid Dread is like 15, Hollow Knight is definitely like 20+.
Yeah.
I was expecting this to be a much smaller endeavor that was like a cool Metroidvania, but a much shorter experience. So hearing that it's this fully fledged, game within that genre is like really cool and surprising. And I think I mentioned to you that the opening hour of this game isn't strong. I don't think at all. It's entirely linear and they are teaching you the combat mechanics very slowly. And I was just like, not that interested in it until get to Mount Quaff.
Yeah.
I think the map is called. Yeah. And that's where it's like, okay, now this is a Metroidvania. Now this is a map and just start, getting around here and start figuring things out. And
yes.
I'm super early in the game still, but I'm starting to see what you see. Where it's just like, okay, I can go this route, but there's this thing blocking me. I can go this route instead. And maybe this is going to get me an ability or an item that is going to help me progress. And then they've got this really cool mechanic. I don't think you mentioned it, where if you come across something where you don't have the ability to circumvent it, so like a platform definitely needs a double jump or a piece of the wall that's got spikes in it and then a handhold above it. So you need something that can protect you. You can use this mechanic where you take like a literal picture of that area and then it plants like a little icon on your map that when you hover over it shows you that picture. So you always know, okay, this is the thing that was blocking me from progress in this area, so that when you get that item, you can go back to all these little markers you've created and never forget like, okay, where the hell was that platform? Where the hell was this? Like, that's super cool. And I hope more Metroidvanias incorporate that in the future, because that can be the biggest like irritation with them.
I mean, but I completely agree. I think you probably have the best example of like when Apex came out, Apex Legends, it's just a battle royale, but it introduced, it like sort of streamlined, it took battle royale and it streamlined a lot of things. And one of the things it introduced was the ping system.
Yeah.
Now, find me a game that doesn't have a ping system.
Exactly. Like it's so core now to a first person
shooter.
You
can't imagine a game that doesn't have that. And I hope that Metroidvanias do get that, because like maybe you'll have maybe people argue like, oh, but it takes away the magic of like remembering. I'm like, no. some maps are too big. Like, you need to,
still exploration focused, because you still have to find that area.
I think it's quite clever. They give you a limited number of things you can do, screenshots.
That's true,
you can take,
it is limited,
which it's a lot. You start with 15, let me tell you, you run out of those things pretty quickly. Like, I ran out at some points. And then you can also put icons on the map, which I started having to do, because I was like, I don't have any of these tokens. However, let me put a reminder to come back here for whatever reason. It's such a clever idea. And then even, look, the last Metroidvania I played was probably Metroid Dread, which is a good number of years ago now. And before that, like, Ori games and then Hollow Knight. But if I think of their combat, they're very, like, don't get me wrong, Hollow Knight's combat, very good, but it's very one tone in that it's literally, you've got your one attack, okay?
Yes.
You get spells to do, which obviously lets you add some variation. Prince of Persia has, like, actual combos, and I'll say to you and everyone who plays this game, have you made it to sort of the main hub where there's, like, a merchant and a blacksmith and whatever?
Yeah.
There's a guy there who's got tutorials. Have you engaged with him at all?
I don't think so, no.
It's so important, and I'm surprised that he's tucked away like as an optional thing. Because, and again, this is a clever thing. I spoke to him and he's like, here's combat lessons. I wasn't going to do them. Like, honest to God, I was like, whatever. However, they put rewards behind them, like money, like crystals. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I really want that upgrade. Let me just do a couple of these. And I'm so glad I did, because that showed me how deep the combat is, which at first glance you'd think, it's you push square, 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 you do your combo, whatever. Mm-hmm. Until you do those tutorials, it's like, oh, if you push down and square, you do like a trip attack, which shoots the enemy up, and then you can juggle them in the air. It's like a dumb example.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that with the slide. You can slide into them and launch them. Yeah.
It's actually surprising how deep the combat is. Like, I didn't at all expect it to be that deep. And after doing those tutorials, I was like, okay, it actually, and particularly by the end of the game when enemies are, you know, a lot more challenging, it's like, oh, you kind of have to trip them because it just makes killing them a lot easier. And then,
yeah.
Add on to that, there's a parry system as well, which just makes it, you know, even on the parry system, while I found the window pretty big and forgiving, if you miss time it, you take more damage as opposed to if you didn't parry. So it's very, like, there's just clever touches like that, which, again, surprised me. I just think...
I'm still getting used to the parry, because it's like, it's a strange, it's like working against my muscle memory, because the sword or the enemy's weapon makes a glint, like a normal glint or a yellow one, depending on the parry that you have available to you.
Yeah.
But you still have to time your parry according to when the attack hits.
Attack happens,
so my mind is constantly like, I see that glint, I press parry, and I'm like way too early, miles too early. So I'm still getting used to that. I'm not entirely sure why they didn't just, you know, have the glint happen with the attack. I don't know if they want the glint to warn you that an attack is coming, but it's a, I don't know, it's working against my brain in a way that I need to overcome.
Nah, I get that. I mean, but it is, I think it's still done so well that even there are a bunch of boss fights through this game, and I played not on the hardest difficulty, but on a harder difficulty, and I found the balance.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Very good, to the point where, I mean, there were, it's particularly towards the end, there were some very challenging bosses. But it was very satisfying. It just clicked that part of my brain where, okay, it's kind of like Dark Souls. You know what an enemy's going to do. You learn their attacks. But here you get to parry when you know certain attacks are coming. And it just, there's this really good balance of the enemy attacks, I parry, I counterattack. And I just really enjoyed it. It's like,
yeah,
I can't praise this game enough, because I think it deserves to be played by people. And I think the sad reality is it will be overlooked by many, because it's January, it's early days, it's a Metroidvania, not for everybody necessarily. But then I hear people like Noel, who isn't necessarily a Metroidvania fan, really enjoying this game, which I think also speaks to the fact that if you're worried about the game being too difficult, you can tailor it to your playstyle. Like, I know she doesn't particularly enjoy platforming bits. From my understanding, there's a set you can put on that lets you literally just outright skip the difficult platforming stuff if you do not want to engage with it, which is just
very cool. Okay.
And then if you're worried about enemy health and difficulty, you can play on like story mode, so you can still enjoy the game, get, you know, the exploration, all of that, without worrying about, oh no, I don't have the muscle memory or just the capability of, you know, learning how to play this game, meeting this game with its challenge. Yeah, please play this game.
I think it has a custom mode as well, where you can tune the different aspects of the...
Yes, like even...
Yeah, the difficulty.
If you don't want to figure out and explore for yourself, I think there's a mode that will highlight
where you need to go. Yeah, it tells you where to go. Yeah.
Like, this is 2024. It's cool that more games are accessible.
Just so, let me... You know, it totally advises you, like, this is the way we think you should play. You know, it's like normal difficulty with the objective markers off.
Yeah.
But it's like, you can play any way you want. You know, if you're struggling, if you're getting really annoyed about where to go, then yeah, turn this on. And
yeah. It's phenomenal. I really enjoyed this game. And I hope come award season, end of the year, it's not forgotten, because I think it deserves to be up there. Like, it is, I think it takes a genius or a team of geniuses to design a Metroidvania that feels cohesive, keeps players restricted while letting them figure out the map organically. And I think they've just, they've hit the nail on the head. It's so good. Like, I can't praise this game enough.
Yeah, no, I'm very glad that you've enjoyed it. And, you know, knowing that we sort of like share the same opinions on Metroidvanias, I'm excited to play a lot more. And it's cool that the year started off with a surprise. I think I was hoping for this to be good, because it was like, Prince of Persia is cool, and you know, it being a 2D Metroidvania seems like a nice fit. But
yeah,
for it to be as good as it seems to be is a very nice surprise.
Yeah. And so it's also it's just to go full circle on what I said at the top of the segment, where my first Prince of Persia was like the OG. Playing this, I felt like I was that kid again. Honestly, like just running through this maze-like structure and just the spike traps, little natural hazards that were like killers in the original game. I just had such fond memories of that, being the kid going like, oh my God, like I need to, and even it's a lesson for myself remembering like, oh shit, like my love for platforming wasn't just Mario. Like I played the original Prince of Persia way back when, and that it's a platformer, you know, you're just investigating this labyrinth and trying not to die.
So, yeah.
Real cool. I love this approach to the franchise. And look, again, I never played the 3D games. I know people like you would maybe hope to see the Prince have a 3D game again, but I can tell you from my side, I love this, and I would love to see more of this specific Prince of Persia. If Ubisoft...
Hopefully this is successful and they just continue on with this as the new like avenue for this franchise, because it's kind of been in limbo for such a long time. It's been in limbo
for a long time. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Awesome.
Play that damn game. It's really good.
I think that's pretty much it. We are playing other games, but embargoes are like middle of this coming week, so like it will be saved for next week. There is lots of a lot of games coming out in Jan and Feb. I don't know what the fuck Maddie was talking about.
It's more compared to end of year last year. There was so much happening. It was like moving from one game to the next. Like, good example. There's a whole ass Avatar game that I just have not played, which you've played a little bit of, but maybe we'll talk about next week.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. I mean, I played that prior to finishing Alan Wake. I'll chat about it a bit more next week, because we just don't have time now, and I think Prince of Persia is a bit more important.
Cool. Shall we talk about games coming out in this complete lull that we have?
I wonder if we even have...
I don't know if there are a lot of games, but there's... GameSpot does have their huge...
Do they have their thing. 2024?
Yeah.
I'd hope so. Otherwise, Darren's not doing his damn job. I'm joking.
Who wrote this? Gabe Gerwin. It's not Darren.
Oh, yeah. It's not Darren. It's... Where's the 2024 one? I'm only on the 2023 one. I don't know why. I will pop you
a little link. Your face might freeze as I navigate.
Oh, wait. Hold on. I think I can just change the URL. Huh. That worked.
Really?
Sweet. Yeah.
That was hilarious.
So we're looking at games from today, January 13th, up until January 19th. Not that many.
There's a couple.
But wait, this can't be right.
What?
This is still 2023.
What?
I'm using your link. Hold on. Yeah, because like, I'm looking at it, I'm like, these January, games came out already.
What Forspoken, out January 15th.
I was like, this seems wrong. January 13th until 19th. Okay, there we go. It's not that many. There was a Devil May Cry game that came out on iOS this past week. I have no idea if it's good. So, yeah. We've got Raven Dawn coming to PC January 16th. Atlas Wept coming to PC January 17th. Immortal Life, PC January 18th. Then game Matthew was just gushing about, Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown. It's PlayStation, Xbox, PC. It is also Switch. I don't know why that's not listed here. Yeah, that's coming to Switch actually, later.
I'm pretty sure
definitely
it's
coming
out,
to Switch.
Yeah.
So. Huh. Okay, well.
Get told Dave to sort his shit out.
And then, there's more. Yeah. And then Arklands on January 19th, coming to PC. Another Code, Recollection, Switch, coming to Switch, January 19th. And then The Last of Us Part 2 Remastered, coming to PlayStation 5, January 19th.
Nice.
$10 upgrade for PS4 owners. Pretty cool.
That is a game I'm very excited to see on PS5 purely because that looked perfect on PS4 somehow already.
Yeah, the game looked fucking good on PS4. So, yeah.
Like, give me that PS5 with the smooth frame rates. Cool. Yeah, mm-hmm, deal. Mm-hmm.
And some of the best stealth action gameplay out there.
Yep. Cool. Shall we get to news? I do not know what to start with because it feels like news is it's still early beginning of the year, so there's not like huge.
It is, yeah. Is I guess let's news. Talk about what the thing that's coming up this week that we'll talk about next week, the Microsoft or the Xbox Developer Direct. So this happened last year as well. If I remember correctly, like it was like Feb,
yeah.
Yeah, this is the show where Hi-Fi Rush was shadow dropped, you know, back in the day. And I think we got a very long look at Redfall, and that was where the real alarm bells started ringing for Redfall.
Remember that time.
But yeah, so there's another Developer Direct. It's taking place on Thursday, January 18th at 12 p.m. Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time, 8 p.m. UK time. That means it's 10 p.m. local time. Well, not for Matthew. It's
perfect for me.
So. And it's basically the blurb here says that we'll get an inside look at a selection of highly anticipated games coming to Xbox, PC, and Game Pass. Shortly after, ZeniMax Online will host the Elder Scrolls Online 2024 global reveal to preview the game's big update. So there's four big games that Microsoft have kind of like mentioned here that are going to be part of the show.
Yeah.
The big one is the Indiana Jones game. So we've known that Machine Games, developers of Wolfenstein, have been working on an Indiana Jones game. Todd Howard has been advising on this game as well. But I did not expect them. I did not expect, firstly, like the game to be shown this early in the year, but also 10 minutes of the game to be shown.
But to be fair, it was shown this game was revealed a long time ago. It was
ages ago, but they haven't said anything since. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm keen to see.
It's cool. This could have been like an E3 thing, but E3 doesn't exist anymore. So.
I know.
There were rumors going around that this was coming out 2024 because all the other games here are coming out 2024. It's not being confirmed. I wouldn't be shocked if they put a 2024 date on it.
It's November 2024, for example.
Yeah, it could be a big holiday game. The next one is Avowed. That's the RPG that Obsidian, the makers of Fallout New Vegas and...
Grounded.
What's the other RPG? Grounded. But they're making a more like a sort of Skyrim-ish game. I think a lot smaller in scope. It is out this year. It already has a release window, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Or they just said 2024 last time saw it. So.
Yeah, this is another one that was shown. I mean, we haven't seen...
In like June last year. Yeah.
Wasn't it way before then? I feel like it was...
It was announced ages ago. Yes. And then it resurfaced June last year with actual gameplay.
Have they shown gameplay?
And then people like, oh, this doesn't look anything like I thought it would look. Because it looked quite colorful and... So, looks cool. I like Obsidian's RPGs, so we'll see. Oh, they did the Outer Worlds. Outer World. Why do those two games have the same name? Almost the same.
It's the worst. Outer Worlds.
Aura: History Untold. This was also revealed in June last year. I think it's made by Oxide Games, a studio funded by veterans of the strategy genre and the creators behind classic strategy titles like Civilization 5. So this is another like strategy game of that ilk. And then Senua's Saga: Hellblade 2. This has to get a release date here. Surely.
Yeah.
Like, this is a game that has been teased even before the Series X came out. Like,
whatever.
Like, they've been talking about this game for so fucking long. Yeah. It has to get a date. I know last year they said 2024 for it, but like, surely this is the time you set a date and you show like gameplay. And,
I also think so. Like, because even that, funny enough, we've like barely seen any. I don't think we've actually seen gameplay.
It was like one of the first games announced that it was using Unreal Engine 5, and everyone then was like oh, okay, so this game's fucking years away because Unreal Engine 5 is not even a thing yet, you know?
Hey, Unreal Engine 5 is a thing now. Where's the game?
It's a thing now. Fortnite's using it. Like, some games are using it. We got that Magic Hand Shooter using it. It's wild that year.
Put it on
do
the
you think? Do you think we get another surprise a la Hi-Fi Rush?
I was thinking that. Look, we don't want to be greedy. Okay, the four games from Microsoft to sort of set the tone for the year. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of the showcase, all these games have release dates, and it's almost like, to what Phil Spencer said once upon a time, they want to hit like a big release every quarter. I think he said that. It's like there's a big triple A per quarter.
I don't
think
they've ever done that.
They've never done it. So I think this, for example, is like, yes, avowed, like, it's not likely, but like avowed Q1, Indiana Jones Q2, like, you know what I mean? They can list it out. Yeah. It would be cool for them to map out the year. However,
that would be a good approach with the four games. Yeah.
And
I think
be clear? I have no insight. I work on Xbox. This direct,
I'm taking this as gospel.
It's gospel. I get told shit. Okay. This is just my assumption. So if it happens, I'm sorry. It wasn't an actual leak. But I wouldn't be surprised. It would be a nice little cherry on top because I think the response to Hi-Fi Rush was really good. I know maybe Hi-Fi Rush isn't as successful as we all hoped it would be, but it was still a nice surprise for Microsoft. And I think they saw that sentiment of like, this went down really well. Maybe that out of one of their 4 million studios, there is a game ready to go that hasn't been released. It's also like Hi-Fi Rush, a side project. I'd love to see them go, cool, you've seen these four games, here's a surprise out now. Shit, in the perfect world, that would be amazing.
I would love that primarily, but I think that's because like Hi-Fi Rush was like one of my favorite games from last year. I don't think they'll do a shadow drop per se. But I think if anything, there will be a game that they've not disclosed that they will show, you know.
Hollow Knight Silk Song out now. Also, we bought Team Cherry.
Don't play with my heart.
We bought Team Cherry.
Could you imagine?
Silk Song game out now.
Show just opens with Silk Song and it's like out now. Xbox Game Pass. Boom.
I'm there. Let's do it. What are you waiting for?
I don't think so. If I was going to put money on Silk Song appearing, the eventual Nintendo Direct in February.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it would appear there. And if not there, then we have to wait till fucking June.
Oh my God. Yeah. Wait to see it. Yeah. I think just
news piece,
sticking with Microsoft quickly, I guess let's just talk about Starfield. Starfield's next update promises over 100 fixes and improvements. PC beta
will it make it fun?
Will it remove all of the load screens?
No,
it won't, because I think that ain't a patch that can just happen. I don't know what this promises, but Starfield's not going away anytime soon, and I don't want it to be clear. It's more, I'd love to see what they're going to do with it. It's their big game. What plans do they have? No idea.
Some of these fixes: players can expect improvements to sun disk geometry and planet ring shadows.
Yes.
Awesome. Remedies for instances when ships' hatches are marked as inaccessible. Okay, that's a big one. Plus another fix for the lingering and entirely hilarious issue of asteroids following ships. That sounds like a feature, not a bug.
Why are you removing that? Ships have their own gravitational pull. It's science.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. What's going on here?
I mean, for people still attempting to engage with Starfield, that's cool. It's cool that the game's getting better for you. There's almost nothing at this point that will get me to play.
I will say that if you are a big Starfield fan, I'm glad I played the game through to see credits, because I do still think the twist or how they set up New Game Plus is very cool and interesting. So yeah, if you're playing the game, I get it. You want to keep playing New Game Plus for a number of reasons. Here's a big patch for you. Last piece of Xbox news is that Sea of Thieves reportedly could be coming to PlayStation and Switch, possibly in early 2024. And this is according to this article, following speculation that Microsoft may be considering bringing Hi-Fi Rush to Switch.
There was reports in the same week that were like saying two different games, but neither of them was saying no, the other one's wrong, this is the actual game. They were just kind of saying that in tandem both of these games sounded like they were coming.
So
I know Jeff Grubb at Game Giant Bomb said that he had heard from people at PlayStation that Sea of Thieves was coming. He had not heard anything about Hi-Fi Rush, but then other sources were saying Hi-Fi Rush. Steven Totilla also mentioned Sea of Thieves coming to other platforms. So I definitely think this is a thing that is being discussed. I don't think this is a thing that, you know, this isn't a thing that Microsoft announces at their direct, you know.
No, this is
like you get a state of play from PlayStation and next thing fucking Sea of Thieves pops up.
I'm still adamant that long term Microsoft puts maybe not like day and date, but Microsoft puts their games on PlayStation and other platforms because what do they have to lose?
No, I agree. And I think it will take some time for them to warm up to the idea of doing it for their big franchises. Like, will we see Halo on PlayStation anytime soon? Definitely not.
Probably not.
Like, I absolutely don't think you'll see that.
Starfield on PlayStation, I'm telling you, like that. Look, given how
given that if that game's struggling, then yeah, absolutely.
But also given like it's struggling, but think of how many copies it sold. That early edition, whatever the hell it was called, that thing sold so many copies. Can you imagine people on PlayStation? Like, I know we know Starfield is not like a fantastic game, but you best believe there are Bethesda fans on PlayStation who are like, yes, I'd love to play Starfield.
Yeah, absolutely.
To me, it's a no-brainer. Like, why wouldn't you do that? But what do I know?
I could see it. And I think it's totally fine. Like, you know, if Microsoft wants to keep them for a few years and then put them on rival platforms, that's great. That's more money for them. And I think Sea of Thieves is a great one because they can work with, like, crossplay there. And, you know, that community is so big, keeps growing. It's, like, the one game that is just, like, trucking along so successfully that people don't talk about. At least in mainstream circles.
It's nearly 6 years old at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
Wild.
Yeah. And Hi-Fi Rush, as good as it was, it underperformed, like, sales-wise. So why not take this really critically acclaimed darling and just put it on places where people will actually purchase it more? Yeah.
Yeah. How do you think it would run on Switch? Because it's not
having fun.
It's not like visually like I love the visual style, but it's not necessarily graphic intensive. I think
they need to make some concessions because that game needs to run at 60, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So getting it to run that low might be challenging. Mm-hmm. But we'll see.
What do you want to talk about? You want to talk about some
Pokemon with guns? Okay.
Let's talk about Pokemon. It's an actual
Pokemon
game.
Pal Worlds, not Pokemon called, with guns adventure.
Yeah, not called
Pokemon
with guns.
Oh, it's entering early access. That's more boring. Okay. It's coming to PC, Xbox, and Game Pass, but it is early access, and it's coming out on January 19th. It wasn't on the release schedule. Well,
Gabe Gowan, just this man.
Disappointing.
If you've not watched this trailer,
it is nuts.
Do yourself a favor. Because, okay, if you're watching the video version of the podcast now, this is a Pokemon clone through and through until your heart cuts. I don't know if it's this trailer, but there is a trailer where it's, here we go. They're straight up shooting in this.
But that's not even the wildest thing. You see that and you're like, okay, they're shooting. Cool. But then it hard cuts to like a factory where the Pokemon are constructing weapons.
Exactly.
And you're like harvesting other Pokemon for like food.
Yeah,
and
not in this trailer, but the first reveal trailer, whatever it was, hilarious. That trailer starts and ends in two completely different places and you'd never
just
predict.
The most wild thing I've ever seen. Yeah.
So
so it's launching in early access. It says here to introduce
PvP, new pals, new areas and dungeons to explore, plus new survivor items and buildings. The initial early access version will include 70 buildings and 350 item types. I guess there's a building mechanic. It's also considering incorporating entirely new game systems based on play feedback. This game is going to be in early access for a while.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely will be. Okay, now we can talk about numbers. Big, big graphics
Sorry,
cards.
Pals wow. can be made to put to work making fire, generating electricity, or mining ore, or sent to a factory line where they can be made to automate different tasks until they drop dead.
Perfect.
This is what a game I've is been, this game?
This is a game I've been waiting for my whole life.
Oh, and that's out. That's for the good players. Those good players can use that to then fight the poaching players who poach other pals, do crime, and sneak into wildlife sanctuaries to capture rare pals that can be sold for cash.
I love that
so
one.
So this is the very Hogwarts Legacy version of like, I'm going to stop the poachers by actually imprisoning you.
But I love that one of the bullet points there is like, the bad people can do crime. You know, like, yeah. do this, do crime. Best.
With players able to do crime and nice. All the associated attributes that
Absolutely
that comes with.
Absolutely love that. I'm here for it.
Oh my God.
Okay. The last few pieces of news. NVIDIA's RTX 40 Super GPUs deliver more power without price hikes. This means nothing to me. I see...
Bit of a dubious headline, but...
Okay, explain.
So yeah, there's three new graphics cards out. There's basically the RTX 4080 Super, which is barely an upgrade on the 4080. It's like, I think if you're looking at CUDA cores and like the boost clocks and all of that, it's within like 1-3% or something ridiculous. The difference there is that instead of costing $1,200, it now costs $1,000, and it is replacing the current 4080. So basically, they're just reducing the price of the 4080, but rebranding it.
Yeah.
$1,000 is still a fuck ton of money for a graphics card, especially when the higher end enthusiast cards used to be between like $700-$800. You know what I mean? Now we're looking at $800, and that's not even the highest end. The 3090 is sitting at $2,000.
Oh my gosh, that is
so. Ludicrous. Yeah, no, it's extreme. It's extreme. The 4070 Ti is the super interesting one, I think, because it is the one that has a pretty significant upgrade over the current 4070 Ti. So it's also replacing the existing card.
Yeah.
It will have a pretty broad increase within like 10% across most of its attributes. The biggest upgrade is that it's jumping from a 12 gigabyte card to a 16 gigabyte card, which for a lot of modern games is very important. That means it has the same memory as the 4080.
Mm.
So that just gives a lot more longevity to your card. And it is going to be coming in at the same price as the current 4070 Ti, which is $800. So no price decrease, but you're getting a significantly better card, in my opinion, for the same price. And then the 4070 is kind of the same thing. No price decrease, same as $600. It gets a very big jump in terms of performance over the current. So the 4070 Super gets a big jump over the 4070. It still only has 12 gigs of memory, but like its clock speeds, its CUDA core count, its ray tracing core count, like almost over 20% difference. Yeah. So lots more power for same price. So that's good. It's cool that NVIDIA, I don't know if they were necessarily bullied in this position because the prices are still pretty high. Like 4070 is considered a mid-tier card and it's costing like $800. That's like pretty obscene still.
It's chump change.
But it is a step in the right direction. Here's the hope that when the 50 series comes out, you know, the 5070 and 5080 equivalents will just stay at these prices for the, you know, drastic performance difference you'll get there. So that's the hope, that we won't get a 5080 that's back to like $1,300 or something like that. These are out. These are doing like a staggered launch throughout January. So I think the first one is the 4070, then it's the 4070 Ti, and then the 4080.
Nice.
But they're all out by the end of Jan. So yeah.
So if you're looking to start 2024 in 4K, here you go.
If you waited, I think if you're on a 30 series card, there's no real reason to upgrade yet. I think you're starting to see like games starting to pressure like your card in a way, but I don't think it's at the point yet where it's like, man, I should really drop $1,000 on a new card. I would wait till
like
50 series and then just get a monumental jump in performance.
Carry on.
No, I was just going to say the 4070 Ti is basically, well, it's just passing like a 3090. So if you have like anything between like a 3080 and a 3090, I don't think you should be looking at an upgrade anytime soon.
I've got 3070 Super, I think. I mean, and my card's still absolutely fine.
Yeah, I think once the 50 series comes out, that's when it's going to start becoming a bit more pressure, because then by then it's also already been like five years. Yeah. So you're looking at like a generational leap when you jump back. I always advocate for like skipping a gen when upgrading. Going each gen is just kind of insane.
Last piece of news, very important. Cult of the Lambs sex update is coming.
I mean, people they asked on Twitter if they wanted this. People said yes. And they did it.
They've done it.
I bet they were doing it anyway.
Listen, the Cult of the Lamb social media person deserves
10 out of 10.
All of the raises. Because this account, like, well, I don't know. Wait, let me see. If I click it, I need to see their Twitter accounts. Nope. There's no links here. And then I've gone off the wrong article. This social media presence, like, Cult of the Lamb should have just been a great indie game that disappeared. Like, people played it, loved it, and then moved on with their lives. But it's still in the zeitgeist because I think the social media has done right, and there are constant updates for the game. And you're probably right. They had this update planned, I'm sure, and they positioned it like, what do you guys want? And it was done very smartly that, you know, this is what the fans want. And now they're like, oh, here you go. You asked for it. Here it is.
Exactly.
10 out of 10 for Cult of the Lamb.
I have to read this very thoughtful description that Polygon put together of the trailer. You should watch the trailer. Yes. It's a fun. I mean, this game's got really good marketing, like you just said, and the trailer's always really good. But this paragraph. The Sins of the Flesh trailer shows a cultist in the nude, except for an artfully placed fig leaf, holding and spinning the titular lamb while laying on the riz. Okay. Mm-hmm. In the background, two other cultists run into a tent together, which sways and moves while we hear giggling from the inside. Mm-hmm. The two emerge holding an egg with a sinister look. What? With sinister looking eyeballs drawn on the outside. This game is great. That's fantastic. What a game.
It's too good. There we go. We're seeing it play out. There we go.
Assume the spinning with a riz. I don't understand. There we
go. Oh, bam. I still have to play this game one day.
It's great. I think you would. I never got around to finishing it, but when I was playing it, I was having a good time. Really good, like, loop of roguelite and base building.
Nearly 600,000 followers on Twitter.
Game is big.
Quiet game is indie
game. Real big.
That's crazy.
Man, Devolver knows how to pick them, hey? They really just... I think that has been the core of their business just doing so well, is they have identified games so like games that will sell and games that people will be interested in so well, and then supported them in a way that, you know, gets that vision over the line and markets them in a way that they know people will engage with. So yeah, props to Devolver for just being a good publisher in that front.
Look at this premium content. Happy Nude Year. I mean, come on. It's genius. It's so good. But on that note, that is news.
That is news. All the news. That is the riz. That's the news and the riz.
For shizzle, my nizzle.
I still don't understand what riz means.
It must be a dance move.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Which takes us to...
We don't have questions, do we?
We've got nothing.
Okay, well, everyone's, if you want to send us holiday questions... you can email us checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on all our social channels. Wow, I'm getting so tongue twisted today. All of our social channels at Checkpoint Chat, pretty much everywhere.
Nice.
Yeah, and that's been, I guess, the first episode of 2024. It's actually light outside for Matthew.
Oh my God.
We might go for a run in frigid conditions.
Maybe.
Who knows? Who knows? Yeah.
Maybe I'll surprise myself.
Yeah. See little frosted tips in your hair where the ice starts, you know, forming there.
Love to see it. Still not running in long pants. I'll have you know.
Are you joke? What is wrong with you?
Nothing.
No.
Absolutely.
Do you not have running tights?
No. Don't need them.
Oh my God. Okay. I disagree with you, but okay. You just got that natural Portuguese hair on your legs.
Natural insulation just happening all over my legs.
I don't want to talk about your insulated legs right now. Maybe next week we can talk about more video games.
Nice.
It's Checkpoint Chat. Thank you so much for listening. We're glad to be back, and we will see you next time.
Mm-hmm.
Have a good week. Goodbye.
Bye.